Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hey, Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for asking.
You're welcome.
How are you?
I am doing fantastic.
Okay, now that we've said all that bullshit.
Are you ready?
Yes.
The episode I have today is like a 40 on the gruesome scale.
What?
I just have to warn everyone, it involves the death of children and an animal.
Oh,
so just, if that's
God.
Something that you can't deal with, I'm not even exaggerating.
What do you do on your free time to find these things? What's wrong with you?
You know I'm a sick, sick person.
You are. You need help.
I need help. I need therapy.
You need to take your medication.
Oh, my goodness. I know.
All right. I am ready to compartmentalize.
All right. In honor of Mother's Day.
Oh, Jesus.
This is a story that happened on Mother's Day 2008. So on that Mother's Day, Barbara Freiberg was waiting for a call from her daughter, Lisa. And Lisa never missed calling her on Mother's Day. Ever since Lisa had become a mother herself, the day was even more special. As the day wore on and the evening came, Barbara never got the call from Lisa that she was waiting for. Barbara figured that Lisa must have gotten distracted in her own celebration of Mother's Day, and she told herself, you know, I'll see Lisa tomorrow and, you know, we can wish each other a happy Mother's Day then. That next day, Monday, May 12th, 2008, when Lisa didn't drop her children off to the babysitter as expected, Barbara and her husband drove over to Lisa's house to check on her.
So her husband isn't Lisa's dad?
Correct. Lisa lived in Lutz, Florida with her two children, 7-year-old Zachary and 2-year-old Heather Savannah. Living with Lisa and the kids was Lisa's boyfriend of about 9 months. His name was Edward Covington. Lisa and Edward had met on an online dating site in August 2007, and he'd officially moved into her home with she and the kids the month prior. He had been living there off and on while they were dating, and the relationship was going really well. So they just made it official in April, and Edward moved in. During the time he lived with the family, Edward assumed a parental role, kind of with the two kids.
Where was her dad?
I don't know where Zachary's dad was, but I do tell you a little bit about Heather Savannah's dad a little bit later. So he is still in the picture.
And they have separate dads?
Yes, they have separate dads. According to Edward, the kids loved him. He participated in potty training Heather Savannah. He cooked for the kids. And Heather Savannah was kind of picky, so he said, you know, I would withhold the bread and the vegetables to make sure she ate her meat first, you know, got the protein.
You can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat.
If you don't eat your meat.
Sorry, you just led me into it.
I know, that was perfect, right? He bathed her. He would have Zachary in the kitchen with him. He was teaching Zachary how to cook. And Zachary had a tendency to run off sometimes, like when they were in public. So Edward even warned Zachary on the dangers of running off by telling him, you know, there's dangerous people in the area, pedophiles and things like that. So he was really big into helping parent these kids.
Zachary's what, second grade?
Seven, yeah. Edward not only helped with the kids, but he also helped Lisa with the household chores. While she was at work, he cooked for the family and cleaned the dishes to give Lisa a little time off from the kids. So he was pretty helpful.
What'd Lisa do?
I'm not sure what she did.
Why ain't he working, Tanya?
I know. Because he's a convict, and I'm not sure what he did. In the days prior to Mother's Day 2008, Edward and Lisa were having trouble potty training Heather Savannah. And she hadn't been eating well. Around the same time, Lisa's mother, Barbara, noticed that Heather Savannah had a swollen lip. When Barbara asked about it, Edward said, oh, it must have been caused when I was rubbing her mouth too hard, like to wipe it off.
I don't like where this is going.
I know. The Friday prior to Mother's Day, Barbara noticed that Heather Savannah also had handprints and bruises on her buttocks, and at the inside of her swollen lip, there was a cut. Barbara photographed Heather Savannah's injuries and showed them to Lisa later that day. Barbara told Lisa that she believed that Edward was responsible for the injuries. Zachary and Heather Savannah spent the night with Barbara that night. When Lisa picked the kids up around noon the next day, Lisa told Barbara that Edward said it had to have been the babysitter who caused Heather Savannah's injuries.
The babysitter.
It's the babysitter. Around 2 p.m. that Saturday, so this is the Saturday before Mother's Day, Edward's probation officer, Stephanie Lorino.
So he's on probation?
He's on probation. And I'm not positive what exactly he did, but I do talk a little bit about some of the crimes he did later in this episode. So I think you'll probably get an idea. She stopped by Lisa's house to see Edward. Edward, Lisa, and the kids were all home at the time. According to Stephanie, Edward appeared calm. He didn't say anything that was alarming or concerning. And his interactions with Lisa and the kids seemed normal to her. That evening, Tom Fish, who is Lisa's ex-boyfriend and Heather Savannah's father, asked Lisa to bring the kids to his mother's house for family pictures.
Both kids?
Both kids.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Lisa and Edward brought the kids to Tom's mother's house, but Edward didn't go into the house at first. At some point, he did go inside and visited with Tom and his family for about 45 minutes. During the visit, when Zachary referred to Tom as Tom Tom, Edward corrected Zachary and insisted he address Tom as Sir. Edward explained that he believed in being strict with children. Tom didn't observe anything unusual about Edward's speech or demeanor either. He was just like, oh, okay.
That's a little weird.
It is a little weird. So I told you that Lisa's mother and her husband were heading over to Lisa's house that day after Mother's Day. When she got to Lisa's home that Monday, what she saw caused her to frantically telephone the police. Police arrived on the scene and found the house in complete disarray. The furniture was turned over and there was blood on the floor, walls, and surfaces in every room except the bathroom. They found Zachary's body, as well as the bodies of Heather Savannah, Lisa, and their family pet, a dog, at various locations throughout the house.
Does the dog have a name?
His name was Duke. I'm not sure what kind of dog he was. Heather Savannah had been dismembered and decapitated.
Heather Savannah?
And she's two. And what? I will go into her injuries much more later. Yeah. Zachary's genitals had been mutilated. Lisa's body was in the doorway of the master bedroom with a bloody handprint on the wall nearby. The dog's body was on the floor in Heather Savannah's bedroom. Two hammers and five knives that appeared to have been used in the murders were found and collected. A mesh bag containing bloody clothing was found under the mattress in the master bedroom. Police found Edward in a closet in one of the bedrooms.
What?
He was in the closet sitting on the floor. He was alive. He told officers that he had taken a bunch of pills. He said he took Depakote and Seroquel, and they were prescribed to him. Police did find his prescription bottles. Edward was eventually medically cleared by paramedics at the scene. They did take him to the hospital for further diagnosis and clearance.
Yeah.
As he was being transported to the hospital, he looked back at the house and he said, I can't believe what I've done. after Edward was released from the hospital on May 14th. That was the following day, the Tuesday. He was transported to the sheriff's office where he was interviewed by detectives and he confessed to the murders. Edward was indicted for 3 counts of first-degree murder, 3 counts of abuse of a dead body, and 1 count of cruelty to an animal. A jury was sworn and opening statements were heard on October 22, 2014. On the first day of trial testimony, Edward announced that he wanted to change his pleas to guilty and waive a jury for the penalty phase. The trial court accepted his guilty plea to all 7 counts. His May 14th interview with detective was played at the penalty phase, and he described exactly what happened to Lisa, Zachary, and Heather Savannah.
I bet this is going to be really, really nasty.
Yeah, this is going to be bad. So buckle up. Edward said that Lisa picked up the kids from Barbara's on Saturday afternoon, the day before the murders, prepared lunch for the kids. They had dinner together. Everything was fine. They ate dinner about 6 p.m. Then they took the children to visit with Tom Fish's family. While the children and Lisa were visiting at Tom Fish's house, Edward said he needed to go check his mailbox and left, but he actually went to buy and smoke some crack cocaine. According to Edward, when they got home about 9:30 or 10, the children went to bed and he and Lisa had a drink together and had sex. Edward then played a computer game. He and Lisa went to bed around midnight or 1 a.m. Before bed, he said he took a handful of Seroquel because he was, quote, dog tired, unquote, and it had not been as effective as it usually was recently. And just to clarify, Seroquel is an antipsychotic that is used to treat bipolar and schizophrenia.
Yes.
Most commonly.
Sometimes depression.
Sometimes depression. I think the side effects are like drowsiness, weight gain, things like that. He said he took roughly 1,000 milligrams of Seroquel, including 4 200-milligram extended-release pills, which he described as 100 milligrams over the maximum safe dose.
Why?
I don't know. He said when the Seroquel works properly, it's like turning off a light switch. All the extra thoughts that he has just shuts off and everything goes quiet. It kind of like calms his brain.
Oh, okay.
The extended-release Seroquel was new to him, and he said the first time he took one of them, the 200-milligram pill, the effects lasted 26 hours, so I'm not sure why he's taking 1,000 milligrams.
I wonder what the contraindications are when mixed with crack.
That is a good point. Edward said Lisa fell asleep in his arms. He initially told the detectives he didn't know what happened next, but then he admitted that he kind of remembered what happened the next morning and described what he remembered about the murders. That Lisa and Zachary were still in bed around 10:30 a.m. Sunday morning when he found Heather Savannah awake and lying on the couch in the living room. Edward asked Heather Savannah what she was doing and she started to cry. That was the last memory he had of being in control of himself. And the next thing he remembered was all the chaos and the killing. He said he killed Heather Savannah first and that he, quote, hurt her the most, end quote. And that he cut her in half with a bread knife.
What? Yeah. Wait, that's not even possible.
No, she's not cut in half, but she has some serious injuries to her body.
From a bread knife?
From a bread knife. He said the first thing he did was cut Heather Savannah's throat, the jugular, while she was lying on the couch and that he was standing over her. He used 4 back and forth motions. He then, quote, literally ripped Savannah in half, almost like carving a pig, end quote.
Oh my
to a 2-year-old.
God, what the fuck?
He said he had to undress her in order to cut her in half. He believed she was dead at the time, but he couldn't be sure. He also decapitated Heather Savannah and set her head by the front door. Although he initially said Heather Savannah was crying, he later said she never yelled or cried. He specifically remembered that the bread knife he used on Heather Savannah was bent in the process. When asked about a bite mark that was on her arm, he said he may have left that the night before because she was biting Zachary, and in order to break her of that habit, they would bite her back.
Oh, that's a really good parenting tip.
After he killed Heather Savannah, Edward remembered choking and strangling Lisa. He didn't remember punching her, but thought he might have because he remembered her having a bloody face. He used a 2.5-inch wide butcher knife and an upward motion to stab her in the chest, which he believed probably perforated her heart and the lung. Zachary was still asleep in his top bunk when Edward stabbed him. Zachary didn't say anything during the stabbing, and he thought he stabbed Zachary 3 times, once in the back and twice in the chest cavity. He remembered a chopping knife breaking off inside of Zachary when it hit bone. Edward then brought Zachary to the living room and removed his scrotum and penis.
What?
I don't know. He said the mutilation didn't have a sexual basis and that he used pliers to touch Zachary's penis.
There's clearly a sexual basis.
Like, why would he do it?
You wouldn't do it otherwise.
Right?
And he used pliers? What is that to insinuate? I didn't touch him.
Yeah, I didn't touch him. I mean, after all this, does that even matter? Edward killed Duke last by punching him and hitting him with a hammer.
Why? Why they always got to do that to the dogs and cats?
I know. It makes no sense. Edward said that after Lisa was dead, he kept hearing her voice, so he cut her again. Then he, quote, got what he could find of Savannah and Zachary and put them over by the front door, end quote.
Are you talking about pieces of their body?
Yes. He remembered calling his ex-wife Sherry twice, but she didn't answer, and he thought he may have left a message the second time he called. At some point, he thought this must be a nightmare and that he better take some more Seroquel. He also took aspirin, Tylenol, Depakote, and had some caffeine. He vaguely remembered falling down in the closet while he was looking for clothes. The next thing he remembered was the police officers telling him to get out of the closet. He didn't know how long he'd been in there, but remembered it was daylight when he went in.
He had to have been covered with blood.
Edward described himself to detectives as a time bomb that had been waiting to explode and finally blew up. He said he didn't know why he blew up because Zachary, Lisa, and Heather Savannah did nothing wrong.
I have to tell you right now, this is a real, real pisser.
I know. It's bad because this, what the medical examiner says, is terrible.
We're going to have to do like wife kills her husband next or something. Some sort of vanilla.
I'm going to tell you what the medical examiner said right after we take a break.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The medical examiner, his name is something I can't quite pronounce, so I'm going to call him Dr. C. He performed the autopsies, and he testified about the causes of death for everyone and the injuries they received. So I'm going to go over what happened to Lisa. Lisa's death resulted from a knife wound to her neck, which transected her trachea, esophagus, and left carotid artery.
Didn't he say that he thought he stabbed her upward into the heart and lung?
Yeah, he didn't even mention her neck. It was a gaping wound, 11 centimeters long, which I looked up. It's about 4.3 inches, which is pretty big.
Yeah.
Which appeared to have been made by a back and forth sawing motion with a knife. Prior to the infliction of the fatal wound, Lisa suffered severe injuries to her face, which were likely caused by a beating. Lisa had contusions and abrasions to her shoulders and chest, a 5-inch cut and stab wound to her left breast, a superficial 8-centimeter laceration across her abdomen, which extended to a 28-centimeter abrasion and contusion on her right foot, all of which were inflicted when she was still alive. She also had multiple cuts to her hands and fingers, which were consistent with defensive wounds. Before she died, she suffered a skull fracture, consistent with blows from the smaller hammer that was found at the scene, which caused the whole area at the base of her skull to become fragmented. Based on the facts, there were multiple injuries on all of her body surfaces in different planes. Dr. C opined that Lisa was conscious during the attack, moving around and trying to escape the injuries. Stab wounds to her abdomen and pubic region were inflicted after her death. That seems quite a different story than what Edward initially told the police.
And it's overkill.
Oh, for sure. Now I'm going to tell you about Heather Savannah. So buckle in.
Okay.
The cause of Heather Savannah's death was a cut to the front of her neck. Prior to the infliction of this fatal wound, Heather Savannah was severely beaten. Her cheek was cut down to the bone. The top of her head was cut with a knife in a scalping motion. And both of her femurs were fractured. And that's her thigh bone. The femur fractures were spiral fractures, which Dr. C said is a hallmark of child abuse that results from jerking a child.
On her thighs?
Mm-hmm. I know. I don't know how, but yeah. Because the femur is your leg bone. Dr. C decided that the leg fractures and head trauma occurred when Heather Savannah was grabbed by the legs and hit against something. After death, Heather Savannah's body was fragmented, which means she was cut.
Disarticulated.
Yes. She was decapitated and her torso was cut from the genital region through the chest. So up through the chest, like he almost cut her in half. Her right leg and hip were entirely removed from her body.
What?
I know.
What?
I know.
This is so awful.
I know. Isn't it terrible?
This must have taken him a long time.
Right?
And the scene, oh my God, for the grandma to walk in, Barbara, and see Tanya.
I know.
Oh my God.
Horrific.
Oh my God. Go ahead.
Heather Savannah also suffered postmortem fractures to her tibia and fibula and multiple stab wounds to her chest and abdomen. Zachary died as a result of 5 stab wounds to his neck and back, which caused internal injuries to his vessels and organs, including his heart. Prior to his death, Zachary's skull was fractured in a manner consistent with blows from the larger hammer found at the scene.
So this contradicts what he said, because he said that Zachary was sleeping,
right,
and he stabbed him,
yeah,
and he didn't even scream. But now you're telling me he was beaten first.
Zachary was also stabbed in the sacral region, which is basically in the groin, during which the knife broke and the blade was left embedded in the bone. A different knife was later used to inflict the fatal stab wounds, a large gaping wound to the front of his body, which exposed some of his internal organs, was inflicted paramortem.
Oh my God, Tanya.
And paramortem is either...
You're killing me here.
At the time of death or immediately before the time of death. So he could have been alive when this happened.
Oh my goodness.
Girl, I know. After Zachary was dead, his genitals were removed. Additional stab wounds were inflicted to his chest and back, and decapitation was attempted. Dr. C also determined that the blows to Duke's head were consistent with the large hammer found at the scene. Now, at the penalty phase, Edward presented mitigation, mainly through his parents and several experts. He had some psychiatrists and a pharmacologist testify. The evidence presented at mitigation established that when Edward was a newborn in 1972, he was given a massive overdose of an antibiotic, which caused him to permanently lose 30% of his hearing.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was such a thing as ODing on an antibiotic.
And antibiotics. The hearing loss was especially upsetting to him because it prevented him from becoming a Navy pilot. I guess he had aspirations to do that. But he received a settlement from the hospital and he used it to get private flight instructions. And he got his pilot's license when he was 17.
Getting a pilot's license is expensive.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's about $100,000 to get enough airtime to get your license.
Wow, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I saw that on a true crime show.
Did
about,
you?
About a week ago. That's how I know.
That's how you know? I know. I was like, how do you know?
I just know these things.
I'm so smart. Edward was a good student and he didn't get in trouble in school. He was employed by the Florida Department of Corrections, DOC, from 1996 to 2006.
What do you mean? He's working for the Department of Corrections? He's not in it?
He was working.
Okay.
He had a long history of mental health issues and substance abuse beginning around the age of 15 when he was first hospitalized for mental health treatment. He was diagnosed with a chemical imbalance and he was prescribed medication. He was later diagnosed with bipolar and hospitalized on a number of occasions over the years. He was not always compliant with taking his prescribed medications, and he would self-medicate with drugs and alcohol.
I got a feeling there's a little bit more going on than just bipolar.
While he was working for the DOC, he was abusing cocaine and opiates.
That is not uncommon for mental illness, yeah. You know, self-medicate.
He stopped working for the DOC because he was getting very paranoid due to his cocaine use. He described cocaine to one of the doctors as, quote, like a mistress, like a siren calling to me, end quote.
She don't lie. Yeah. She don't lie.
She don't lie. Cocaine. He told this doctor that he spent about $200 to $250 a week on cocaine during the same time period in which he complained that his psychiatric medication were financially unavailable to him.
I think that's like the equivalent of an 8-ball.
Really? One?
One 8-ball. I mean, I'm not an expert.
I'm not an expert either. I have no idea. But crack is cheaper, right? I don't know if he was using crack or cocaine at this point.
Yes, crack is cheaper.
Not that I know. From what I've heard.
Yes.
Edward admitted that he was aware for years prior to the murders that every time he used alcohol and cocaine, it triggered a rage reaction in him.
Oh.
And could cause him to lose control. But he drank almost a half a liter of alcohol and used crack cocaine the night before the murders anyway. A few weeks before the murders in April 2008, he was involuntarily committed under the Baker Act. And this was when he was with Lisa.
I was just thinking that.
So I was like, this is around the time he moved in.
Girl, go back to Match.com and find somebody else.
Right? Oh my God. Sometime between the end of March and the April commitment, Edward had discontinued his prescribed medications, but the medications, including Seroquel and Depakote, were reinitiated during his time in the hospital. However, Edward admitted that he had again stopped taking his medications about a week before the murders because he was unhappy that they were causing him sexual dysfunction.
Side effects from antipsychotics are pretty extreme sometimes.
Yeah. His mental health records indicated a pattern of providing false information to mental health professionals in order to manipulate the system to get what he wanted. Like, for example, when he's committed in April 2008 after cutting his arm, he told healthcare providers at the hospital that he only hurt himself to get his medications. And he said, quote, you have to abuse and work the system, end quote.
I wonder if he tried to commit suicide. Is that... cut himself and was involuntarily committed.
That sounds like it was probably what happened. It was never clear in the court record, but that's a good guess. But Edward later told a psychiatrist that the hospitalization was actually prompted by a crack binge, after which he became psychotic and paranoid.
Blame it on the crack.
Right.
Which is why I don't smoke crack. Just trying to lighten the mood.
I know. There was a doctor, a psychiatrist that was retained by defense to evaluate Edward for competency. She diagnosed him with bipolar disorder 1, alcohol dependence or moderate use alcohol disorder, cocaine use disorder, and intermittent explosive disorder.
Oh!
I know.
Oh!
That's a bad one.
We had a client whose ex-husband had that intermittent explosive disorder.
Yes, we did.
Oh, man. He was all shades messed up.
Yeah, he was...
scary.
This doctor described Edward as an intelligent person. She believed that he was self-medicating with cocaine and alcohol and noted that his mental health records revealed that virtually every time he was hospitalized from the time he was 15 years old, cocaine or alcohol was involved. There was also another doctor that was retained by the defense. This doctor diagnosed him with bipolar disorder 2, polysubstance abuse disorder, and possible intermittent explosive disorder. The doctor thought that he might have intermittent explosive disorder based on certain violent incidents in his history, including a time when Edward broke his sister's nose, held a gun to her head, slammed her into a wall, and an incident with a property manager and the killing and dismembering of his ex-wife's cats.
I knew it. You were going to say something about...
I know.
A cat.
I know.
He dismembered the cats?
The cats. Edward told this doctor that the morning of the murders, he came out of his room to find the phone so that he could make a call and get more drugs. And that he went into a rage when he saw Heather Savannah playing with that cell phone. The rage he felt toward Heather Savannah before the murders was so extreme because he was coming down from crack cocaine and alcohol. When the doctor asked him why he killed Zachary, Edward said that he had no motive and, quote, was just a cold-blooded killer at the time, end quote. This doctor opined that Edward qualified for both statutory mental health mitigators during the penalty phase. He said that Edward's extreme mental or emotional disturbance was due to stress relating to be on felony probation for an unrelated charge, his issues with Lisa's mother because, you know, she told Lisa that she thought Edward had bruised Heather Savannah, his concern that the Department of Children and Families might become involved with Lisa's family, his unemployment, and his substance abuse.
He did it because he's mentally ill and he was on drugs.
Agreed.
That's why he did it.
It's not because he was stressed out.
He just kills cats when he's stressed out.
Oh my God, I know. Edward discussed with this doctor the events surrounding the killings, and he admitted that he picked up Heather Savannah and threw her at the couch, and that she probably hit the wall. He said that Lisa then came out of the bedroom because she heard Heather Savannah screaming, and that's when he attacked Lisa.
That makes sense.
Yes. The state called two psychiatrists in rebuttal. One doctor, Dr. Myers, diagnosed Edward with antisocial personality disorder with traits of sexual sadism and cocaine use disorder. He's got all kinds of diagnoses.
Where is it? Sexual sadism?
Dr. Myers said that during his relationship with Lisa, Edward told his ex-wife that Lisa and her children were a burden and that he would really like to get rid of them and get back together with her. Dr. Myers also described Edward's history of violence, including the violence toward his sister that I told you about. Violence toward his ex-wife, he knocked out several of her teeth and he broke her wrist. And the joy he got out of hurting people when he played football.
What? Like he wanted to purposely tackle them?
Yeah. No. He was a big guy, so...
Yeah, I saw a picture.
When he tackled them, he probably could hurt them. Dr. Myers believed that Edward's cocaine abuse was misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder. He said that when he reviewed Edward's mental health records and saw multiple indicators of a history of bipolar disorder, but he took it to mean that Edward was telling the healthcare providers that he had bipolar disorder instead of them diagnosing him. Although records from many of his hospital commitments indicated bipolar diagnosis, he tested positive for cocaine during many of those admissions. And Dr. Myers said that bipolar disorder cannot be diagnosed when someone has cocaine in their system and appears manic.
That would make sense.
Yeah, because maybe it mimics bipolar. Dr. Myers stated that every time he went to the hospital under the Baker Act, he was agitated, hostile, threatening, angry, and appeared manic. And within a day or two, he was polite and cooperative. Dr. Myers said he didn't think that Edward qualified for the statutory mental health mitigators, basically because Edward knew that when he smoked crack and mixed it with alcohol, it caused these reactions in him, the rage.
I'm going to guess this doctor is a doctor for the prosecutor.
Yes, it is. He gave examples saying that Edward was playing on his computer the night before the murders and he took a leadership role over other players. So I'm thinking he was probably in like a multiplayer type of game. And so that showed that he had a high degree of cognitive functioning, you know, wasn't cracked out, I guess.
Because he's a leader on a video game?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the only delusions or hallucinations that he had was hearing Lisa's voice after she was dead. He also believed that Edward took an overdose of medication after the murders in order to manipulate law enforcement into thinking he was suicidal and mentally ill.
He was just involuntarily committed a few weeks earlier.
Dr. Myers described him as a very, very bright man, and he mentioned that as Edward was being led out of the house after the murders, he stepped on Lisa's corpse, which indicated a lack of remorse.
What? He stepped on her body?
I know.
He's the worst.
He is the worst.
He's such a horrible human being.
So the trial court found that two statutory mitigating circumstances were established. That the murders were committed while he was under the influence of extreme mental or emotional disturbance, and he had no significant history of prior criminal activity. They also found 24 non-statutory mitigating circumstances, and I'm not even going to go into them because some of them are so stupid. Like, I'll just give you an example, was that he was a good high school football athlete, and he graduated with average grades. You know, and one of them was that he had the pilot's license. So these were things that carried no weight. So now the penalty phase is over, and Edward gets sentenced to 3 death sentences and concurrent sentences of 15 years for each of the 3 counts of mutilation of a dead body and 5 years for cruelty to an animal. So as you know, he appeals. He gets the automatic appeal. The appeals court was especially harsh to him, rightfully so, regarding his actions. They basically ripped him a new one in their appeal. They said that he had stepped into the role of having a familial or custodial authority over these children by virtue of the fact that he cared for them while mom worked. He cooked for them, potty training. He's doing all of this stuff.
He was also abusing them,
right?
Obviously, with the way that Heather Savannah had bruises.
Mm-hmm. They said his role as an authority figure over the children explains why Heather Savannah allowed him to approach her the morning of her murder, even though she knew he was angry with her. And he was also able to sneak up on Zachary in his bed and stab him because Zachary trusted him. So the court said that there's substantial evidence to support the trial court's conclusion that the children were particularly vulnerable to him due to their relationship. Additionally, due to the severity of the injury suffered by Heather Savannah, and even if it was how Edward initially told the detectives that the first thing he did to Heather Savannah was saw her neck with the bread knife. But the evidence contradicts Edward's statements to detectives and supports an even more heinous, atrocious, and cruel version of events. Based on the medical examiner's testimony, death would have occurred seconds after she received the fatal wound to her throat. So it wouldn't have been possible for Edward to have inflicted all the other injuries to her that she suffered before death if he had cut her throat first. And even if the first thing he did to her was pick her up by her legs and throw her into the wall, she still would have been conscious and knew what was happening to her, probably terrified. So the appeals court basically said that regardless of whether Heather Savannah was conscious when he cut her throat, that there's substantial evidence to support the trial court's findings that her murder was heinous, atrocious, and cruel.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence.
So they affirmed his death sentence, and he sits in a Florida prison today on death row.
Well, that was just a pisser. I'm like seriously in a depressed mood. I had to have a drink.
This was one of the most heinous stories I've ever heard about.
So how did he get all three of them without anybody managing to escape?
I'm thinking what probably happened is like he first initially told it. He woke up. Lisa and Zachary are sleeping. He comes into the living room and Heather Savannah is there. And he attacks Heather Savannah, which caused Lisa to wake up. I think Zachary was probably asleep through a portion of it. So he throws Heather Savannah against the wall is what I think initially happened, which possibly knocks her out. He then attacks Lisa and kills her, does what he does to Heather Savannah, and then kills Zachary. And I don't know if Zachary was a heavy sleeper, but there had to be evidence that he was killed in his bed because he did move Zachary's body into the living room and who knows what the fuck he did with it. Oh. But
well, yeah. We kind of know what he did.
That's what I think was a sequence of events. I'm positive he attacked the two-year-old first. And then Lisa hears it.
Why put her head by the door?
I know. I don't know. And why?
And the genitals. Why is... Why?
Why? That's why...
That's not anger and rage.
No, that's just...
Sick.
I don't even know what that is. That's why I was so fascinated with these mental health diagnoses, because I was just trying to figure out, like, what drives this person to do this? Is it because he has bipolar and he wasn't medicated and then he mixes it with cocaine and alcohol and, you know, it causes this reaction in him and... Or is he taking too much of his medication and mixing it with drugs and alcohol? I don't know. But he obviously snapped for whatever reason. He said he doesn't know why he did it. That's just a stupid thing to say. I hate when people say that. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, thank you.
If you have hung in to the end of this episode, thank you so much, everyone.
I had no choice.
I know. Talia had no choice. So, before we go... Let's do review the reviewer.
That's a great idea. What do you got? Something good, something bad?
Oh.
They love us, they hate us.
This person hates us.
Oh.
I found this review on CastBox. It is from someone who was too chicken to leave their name.
Okay.
And that person says, "What in the world are these narrators chuckling about? Super insensitive and childish, especially since the details warn about extreme graphic content. completely loathe people who are not taking their podcasts seriously, goofing around and being sarcastic. Complete garbage and can't get into the story because of the clowns reading at story time. Stop the laughing and nonchalant banter because you will lose listeners and will not grow your podcast audience. Goodbye and good riddance. Sheesh.
Wow. I got a lot of feelings right now. I got a lot of emotions. There's a lot to process with that.
There is.
That's hurtful. That's very hurtful. So my first reaction would be to tell her to fuck off. But you know, we're not like that. That's not the right way.
We're a couple classy broads.
That's absolutely correct. I would like to know what her podcast is because she seems like a podcast expert.
Right?
I'm going to have to give that review a one. I'm going to give it a one because I have never been a clown. You've never been a clown. So we're not
even
clowns.
For Halloween.
So it's incorrect.
It's incorrect. You know, a podcast she needs to listen to is probably like BBC News or something. I mean, there's got to be like a news channel she can listen to that has a podcast.
She was probably one of those girls at a party in the corner that no one wanted to talk to. That's how I envision this person.
She sounds real fun, doesn't she?
You're giving her how many stars?
If I could give zero, I would.
But you can't.
But you can't. So she gets one.
Okay. So I have a review that might make your feelings feel better. This is from soon-to-be Mrs. Coffer. She wrote, "Get it, girls," and gave us 5 stars. She said she loves these ladies. That would be you and me. They get right to the story, skipping the hour of nonsense banter, unlike some other shows. And I can't get enough of Review the Reviewer.
Oh, perfect. Then hopefully she hears this.
She gets 5 stars.
Oh, absolutely.
So soon-to-be Mrs. Coffer, good job.
Yeah, no question. 5 stars all around.
We had so many positive reviews, I just wanted to give a shout out to some of them. Thank you, Tito's 2020, F yeah, 2 a.m., ICT71, White Olander SDJ, MMCW126, S Packham, Honey Sweet, Brit 7891, April K, T Spun 87, and Jenny Lynn.
Thank all of you.
Thank you guys. You didn't have to do that, but we appreciate you.
We want everyone to know that we do read every single review that comes in and across our eyes, I guess. And
sometimes we cry.
Yes, sometimes we cry and we have to console each other, but more often than not, thankfully, they're good reviews. And we appreciate you taking the time to leave us an awesome review.
So we had 1 5-star and 1 1-star. The bitch.
Talia. Anyway, if you would like to know more about the episode, see photos from it, you can go to our website.
TNTcrimes.com.
If you were interested in becoming a member,
you can get ad-free.
Ad-free. That's one of the perks. There's lots of extra episodes.
Early releases.
All kinds of goodies.
Yep.
You can go to patreon.com/TNTcrimes.
Or our website.
Or our website.
Why not?
Info there too. You can go there. It's a double whammy. You can find out about the episode and become a member.
Win-win for everybody.
And you can find us on social media on Instagram and Facebook at Hardcore True Crime. But Talia, we have a few shout-outs before we go.
Yes, we do.
We would like to give a shout-out to Carlos.
Thank you, Carlos.
Sterling.
Dina.
And Rebecca.
Thank you guys so much for becoming a member.
And I hope you're enjoying all of the perks.
Exclusive episodes where we say the word fuck a lot.
And there are some pretty gruesome ones. As if this one wasn't gruesome enough.
This was a really sad story.
It was.
And Tanya and I just try to find ways to make ourselves laugh to get through it. But I'm going to drive home and feel like shit.
Yeah. I mean, we would never laugh at what happens to victims at all. The things that I find funny are just the stupidity of people. We have to lighten the mood somehow. You know, I don't think I could continue to do this podcast. I'm sure you feel the same way. If there was no brevity in it. So
nobody wants to hear us crying.
Exactly. All right, everyone. Until our next episode.
Do not kill each other.
Please don't.
Bye.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.